It's 8:06. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. 36 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us, meteorologist Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Right now we're seeing temperatures actually a little bit warmer than that, 38 degrees Fahrenheit. We're seeing partly cloudy skies. Clouds increasing just a bit later this afternoon. Even though we do have an area of high pressure just to the southwest of us, there's a frontal boundary that's going to destabilize just a little bit the atmosphere. So I do think we'll see a couple of extra clouds later this afternoon and a very slight chance of some light flurries. Otherwise, conditions will be mainly dry. Now, sunny skies for tomorrow, and that's going to be a really nice trend, at least in the first half of Thursday. But precip does return on Thursday for the second half of the day. Temperatures are going to be pretty much in the 50s this week. This warmest day this week looks like it's Wednesday, 55 degrees. Overnight lows on Wednesday, 30s, and then 51 on Thursday. That's when we're expecting some precip in the form of some snow showers for the second half of the day. Half an inch at most. That's all we're going to see as far as accumulation. And then mostly sunny skies to end this work weekend to kick off the following weekend.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:07. Well, stay tuned. Coming up in the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. The county council meeting and work session tomorrow morning, or excuse me, tomorrow afternoon, to interview applicants for vacancies on the Snuttville Basin Planning Commission. Also, Cheryl Fox, Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy, will call in. And Julia Geisler, Julia, of course, is the Executive Director of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance. She'll be talking to us a little bit about her and her partner's experience testing positive for COVID-19. And she also has a message for climbers who are looking to get out on the crag. Stay tuned. KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Again, no word from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, but they have put the avalanche danger today at moderate at all elevations and aspects on upper elevation, northerly facing slopes with dry snow. Triggering slabs of wind-drifted snow is possible. On all other slopes, loose, wet avalanches will become possible as the new snow warms and becomes wet. Again, you can always go online to utahavalanchecenter.org for more information. The Utah Department of Health reported 1,675 confirmed COVID-19 cases yesterday and 5 additional deaths related to the virus. KPCW's Emily Means has more on that.
The number of deaths related to COVID-19 jumped from 8 on Sunday to 13 Monday. One was a Salt Lake County man younger than 60 with underlying medical conditions who died in the hospital. The others were patients at long-term care facilities, 2 from a facility in Salt Lake City and 2 from a facility in Utah County. All 4 of those patients were older than 60 and had underlying medical conditions. So far, no COVID-19 deaths have been reported in Summit or Wasatch County. More than 33,000 people have been tested for COVID-19 in Utah. State epidemiologist Dr. Angela Dunn says labs have been testing around 3,000 people per day and can test around 4,500. However, though labs now have the capacity to process more tests, Dunn says there's only about 1 to 2 weeks' worth of supplies at physical testing sites. The state has ordered more, but that cap puts some limitations on the tests.
And right now, we're seeing a shortage in the swabs that are required to actually conduct the test. And so it feels like, you know, we solved the testing capacity, and now we have to look at the supply capacity.
In partnership with State Healthcare Systems and Test Utah, a public health initiative by Utah's tech sector, the state will set up pop-up sites to increase access to testing. This week, Dunn says locations will spring up around or near Summit County, but the testing criteria still includes only those with symptoms or someone with exposure to a known case and prioritizes first responders and vulnerable populations. Dunn says the accuracy of the test decreases when used on an asymptomatic patient.
But something we're really clear on is right now with our testing capacity and with what we understand about the test, we recommend only those with symptoms get tested. So that's where we are at a state. We expect that any Utahn who goes to any site to get tested, that criteria will be followed.
On Sunday, U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams called on the governors of states that have not given stay-at-home orders to do so. Although some counties, including Summit and Wasatch, have issued their own local stay-at-home mandates, Utah Governor Gary Herbert has instead issued his Stay Safe, Stay Home directive, which has less force than an order. Dunn says the state health department continues to inform and make public health recommendations to the governor. Emily Means, KPCW News.
Hello, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and a proud supporter of KPCW. Garbage and recycling containers should be placed at the curb before 7 a.m. on your scheduled collection day. Keep Summit County green. Recycle.summitcounty.org.
It's 8:12. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Summit County Council meets in a work session tomorrow starting at 12:50 when they will interview applicants for vacancies on the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. They'll then go into closed session until about 4:15. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
Again, the council will be holding the meeting electronically. People can find out how to log on to Zoom. How?
They can certainly look up the agenda on our web portal for agendas. They can call our office to if they have any questions about it, or they can locate a county staff person as well. We're all available to help people get into meetings as well. It's also available on stream on Facebook Live, but without interaction capability there.
Yeah. Have you had any feedback from the public on these electronic council meetings?
Yeah. I mean, we're following our own feedback. You know, also most local entities are conducting electronic meetings right now. So we're all kind of comparing notes to figure out what the best way to get public comment is. That's really our biggest concern at this point, is, you know, making sure that our public meetings are truly public. And it's much different when you're not in a building available to people.
So what's the sense you have? I mean, do constituents feel like they have access to council members?
We haven't had any large complaints at this point, but we also haven't had anything controversial on the agenda. We've purposely not put anything. I mean, we haven't had anything really big on except the emergency items so far, and so I haven't seen this situation come up. However, you know, as we start getting back into the routine in May, I believe that we're going to start having our first planning commissions electronically if we are still working in the same mode. And I think those are going to be the times where we start to understand better how the public feels about this mode of doing meetings.
Okay. As I mentioned, the council will be interviewing applicants for the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Three incumbents have their terms expiring: Joel Fine, Thomas Cook, and Canis Hart. They're all reapplying, plus there are four candidates. And, of course, Canis and Planning Commissioner Melina Stevens both running for county council. So one of them will be, I guess, have to be replaced then, at the end of the year?
That would be the traditional time if somebody was going to give up their seat because they were elected to another office. We'll have to see what happens with that. The nice thing is that even though we've got the three that are reapplying and likely to be reappointed, the other folks that applied, all very, very good candidates with great credentials that could add a lot to the commission. So we continue to have a lot of interest in the Planning Commission.
Sure. Council also scheduled to appoint members to the East County Planning Commission. The staff packet, though, doesn't identify who's being picked. Is that a secret, or?
It's three incumbents that have served. I believe it's, I'm going to have to go into the packet. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's three that have already been serving, and that they are due to be reappointed.
Okay. Let's see. The major item, of course, the continued discussion of the revenue impacts for this year and next. due to just the shutdown of the economy, that the council discussing how tax revenues will be affected under three different scenarios for the coronavirus lockdown. Do you want to talk a little bit about these? I mean, first, scenario A, a lockdown that goes in, until early May. At that point, I mean, how much would the county lose?
Well, I mean, the factors that really are going to weigh on this is how long the current orders stay in place, based on the data that the state and the local health departments are looking at and what they feel comfortable with. The other part of that is, you know, how long does it take us to get back into some normal operation that we would consider normal for Summit County? You know, are we able to allow restaurants to go fully into their mode of operation that they were used to before, or is it some modification of that in order to continue social distancing? Or, you know, the other factors that I'm looking at are large permanent events. You know, can we, watching what Tour of Utah did late last week, and what is the right thing to do in regards to the spread of the virus for this summer, after the current orders are changed or lifted? I don't know the answer to that yet, but that's what we're trying to project in these different scenarios, which is, first of all, just looking at it from a time perspective, 50 days, 90 days, and then also looking at it from the standpoint of what Jeff Jones presented to us last week, in the standpoint of a GRP loss, and then how does he compare that to different year scenarios of revenue, specifically, you know, in his worst case and best case scenarios, going back to 2017 levels of revenue or 2015 levels of revenue.
All right. Okay. So scenario B is the lockdown goes for another 90 days. That runs till about mid-June. And then, of course, we need to consider scenario C. That's that the virus will likely return next fall or early winter. The plan is to put a management team on this to study the options. So who's part of that team?
Well, right now we've got our budget director, Matt Levitt. We've got our economic development manager, Jeff Jones, Corey Forsling, the treasurer, and Michael Howard, the auditor, are all working on this and helping put together some of our analysis. And, you know, the thing that we're most concerned about is that we keep our budget balanced in the current year and not dip into the fund balances that we've already accumulated over the last few years. We feel that we're going to probably need those in further budgets over the next few years as we recover. So we want to keep those intact as much as possible. So these scenarios kind of project towards that. And I think if you're reading into the staff report, what we're really suggesting is, at most, we probably need to do a budget amendment that would equal about $4.2 million less in expenditures. That's mostly in sales tax and fees that we would experience from this time period. And that would allow us, under this analysis, to finish the year in a balanced fashion. Now, that's with the information we know now. If things change, you know, but whether it's better or worse, it would change the outcome.
Okay. Will there be hearings on budget changes? I mean, have we even thought about?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, have we thought about scheduling those at this point, or we're just going to wait back until what the management team has some kind of
report? Now, the way we're looking at it is that we would have to do hearings just as we would normally do with a budget to do a budget amendment. We are putting information in front of the council first to get kind of direction on a level of expenditure reduction that they would like us to go towards, And then we're going to get into the specifics of what that expenditure reduction entails. That means some department by department, office to office analysis of where we can make those reductions. We've kind of projected in the staff report some larger general areas that we could look to achieve some of those reductions. But we need to be more specific with that before we put a budget amendment in front of the council.
Okay. Other items that could affect the budget, what are those, or do we have any idea at this point?
Well, I mean, you know, the other things that are out there that, like I was talking about, the other choices to be made around this emergency are just some other operational things. I mean, do we do the county fair the same way we have done in the past? This is a large 10-day public gathering event. It's in early August. But, you know, what is our health situation going to drive as far as that event? Plus, just like, you know, talking with the Tour of Utah folks, we have to make decisions starting next month on how that event is going to be run in order to do that. And then all of the special event permitting that we do in our summer season, mostly summer and fall, and how are those going to be affected? How is the Ledges building going to be leased under the rest of the year? So all of these are things that we have to be thinking about well in advance in order to affect the rest of the year.
The county has also set a major priority to them is mental health services. Probably need that more than ever. I mean, but it sounds like less money to do that.
Well, I mean, that's a possibility. Certainly, there is a lot of, you know, the mental health services that are available. A lot of it's a Medicaid grant that comes to provide that that service to our community. And the organization of all the nonprofit and other community groups that provide different pieces of the mental health picture for Summit County. A lot of that can continue, but there may be some things that have to be reduced in that program. Really, there's not much, you know, we always talk about there being essential services and then other services. These levels of reductions in sales tax probably require adjustments to all types of our expenditure adjustments to all of our services. Whether they're essential or not, it's just going to be a matter of what level for each service.
Okay. Tom, anything else you wanted to add?
That's all I have today, Leslie.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Another event that many were looking forward to this summer was canceled on Friday, the Tour of Utah, with commitments to hold the 16th annual tour coming up in the next month or two. The organizer of the tour, the Larry H. Miller Sports and Entertainment Group, decided it only made sense to pull the plug now. John Kimball, the managing director of the tour, told KPCW it was a tough decision, but a smart one, given the uncertainty of the COVID-19 pandemic. He says there are a lot of people looking forward to getting back to a new normal this summer.
We really hoped that this would be one of those events that would allow us to get back to normal. The commitment that we have to make so far out in advance to the event was what was hindering us to be able to execute the event properly. You know, it was a tough decision to make. We're heartbroken. We absolutely love the support that Park City and the surrounding communities gives us every year, and we look forward to getting back on the calendar for next year.
With a lot of sponsorships involved, Kimball is hopeful that the sponsors will return next year, but with so much uncertainty, he says they didn't feel like they could move forward for this year. He says they have asked their sponsors to hang on to the money they budgeted this year, but with so many businesses having a tough time, he says there are no guarantees.
Quite honestly, you know, all the sponsors, all the other partners are also dealing, as we're all in this together, they're dealing with their own issues and scenarios, and so We just felt it was in the best interest of everybody to take a break this year and then look to plan and put together an exceptional race in 2021.
Even Larry H. Miller Sports and Entertainment Group is having a tough time. Kimball says that there were some layoffs that went into effect last week.
We are vetting through all the things that we can do to keep our employees on board. We did have some cuts this last Friday. It was very difficult for the organization to make those cuts, and we're doing the best we can to hold things together. But with events and concerts and games, different things, when those things don't happen, it makes it very difficult to keep things going as they have been.
That's the Tour of Utah Managing Director John Kimball. The plan for now, he says, is to go back to the local organizing committees and sponsors next year and try to put together a similar race. KPCW News Time now, 8:27.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins with Keller Williams Real Estate. I love our great community and all the amazing nonprofits that make it the fantastic place it is. And it's a pleasure to support the KPCW Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher to stay up to date on the critical issues facing our community, as well as the human interest stories that are the heartbeat of our town. Real estate information, jhparkcity.com.
8:28 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now on the phone, I have the Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
So let's just start with you, like many other people. I mean, kind of just on hold. Tell us a little bit about what the Summit Land Conservancy is doing during these days of isolation and social distancing.
Well, the Summit Land Conservancy's work is still ongoing. All of the big federal grants are actually due this week, so our conservation team has been hard at work over the last several weeks compiling all of the final information for the new projects that we have going forward. This is for federal funding that was assigned in the Farm Bill back in 2018, so we know that this funding is still available. And we think that some of it ought to be used here in northern Utah on the Wasatch Back. So, our stewardship team continues to work. We are hoping to put on our summer camps this summer. So we had summer camp registration. So I guess the long and the short of it is that my team is actually still fully at work from home and doing our work to continue to save land.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the summer camps. You are taking registration at this point?
Yes, we are taking registrations. We have a COVID-19 cancellation policy. So if we are not able to run the camps, we will refund people's money. But the camps run from late June through early August. The kids are outdoors the whole time. There are no more than 12 kids per camp. Plus, of course, a couple of counselors. But, we are hoping that we will be able to go ahead and run those camps, but we do have a no problem cancellation if we're not able to run them.
Okay. Let's see. Let's talk just a little about what you also got going on. You have scheduled these biannual breakfasts every other year just as a fundraising method, this year was the year, and this was the month, I guess, so you're going to hold these anyways? Tell us about that.
Well, this is, we started having these conservation breakfasts back in 2008, and it was the Summit Land Conservancy's only real fundraiser were these breakfasts, and we decided we'd do them only every other year, and so they happened in even number years, So, of course, as this year was coming up, we were ready to do our 2020 version of the Conservation Breakfast. Deer Valley Resort had generously offered to sponsor it and host us, as they have done for the past several breakfasts. We have E.E. Sue lined up to be the speaker. And, we thought long and hard about what to do about this. We also now have a gala that happens in August, and we know that if we delay the breakfast, it tends to step on the toes of the gala. And the more we thought about it, the more we sort of realized that the open spaces that the Summit Land Conservancy and the city and others have worked so hard to protect over the years have become a really important resource at this critical time. And we thought it would be great just to gather our community together and to say, you know, we know this is a hard time. We know not everybody can give, but we hope everybody can come. So we're moving this to a virtual platform. Nobody that we know of has really done this kind of thing before, so we're stepping on untrod ground, if you will. We're pioneering things a little bit. But on the other hand, we feel like, you know, it is important to get the community together and celebrate some of the things that are nurturing us at this time and giving us resilience. And again, you know, if we had had this in a building, in a place, we can only fit about 200 people. But since it's a virtual breakfast, now everybody can come. And there is no charge to attend. So if people are interested in seeing what a virtual breakfast looks like, we're calling it BYOB, so bring your own bacon. And they can sign up. We're asking people to sign up on our website, which is wesaveland.org. Click on the happenings tab, and they can RSVP for the breakfast, and we will send them a link to join the meeting. It happens at 8:30 a.m. on Friday, April 17th. And people can join. Again, this is another, you know, when we started calling people to say, hey, we're having this breakfast, you know, it was in February, and a lot of people told me that they were going to be in other parts of the country. But now they can join us from wherever they are.
Okay. Again, you do need to go online to register so that they can get the link that they'll need to tune in on.
That's right.
Yeah. And so the guest speakers, you're going to be muting participants, and we'll hear a little bit from you and then from your guest speaker.
So, yeah, we have heard the stories from people who've had, you know, people crashing their events and doing unfortunate things. So that will not be a problem with the platform that we have decided to use. So, you know, but participants will be able to send texts and do some things like that. So it is interactive, and it does happen on real time. Our speaker is E.E. Sue, and she's one of the co-founders of Mountain Towns 2030 and also the, you know, one of the forces sort of behind the Park City Climate, the Park City Foundation's Climate Impact Fund, and trying to figure out, you know, what can we do here in Park City to mitigate our carbon footprint. And, you know, I think it's also important to realize that, you know, obviously this COVID-19 is a huge crisis, and there's an economic component associated with that. But the mission of the Summit Land Conservancy and other nonprofits doesn't change, and is still kind of important in a lot of ways. So we think that EE is going to give a really interesting presentation. She was formerly a broadcaster, and so she's articulate and has a lot of really interesting things to say. So we do hope people will participate.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
You know, I did want to say a huge thank you to you at KPCW for continuing to, you know, keep us all safe and informed during this time. I also want to thank Lou, who groomed the McPolin Farm Trails for cross-country skiing even after White Pine Touring closed. Lou did that on his own time as a volunteer so people could continue to have open space to exercise in. And I also want to note that one of the reasons those trails were able to stay open so late in the season was that Bill White Farms, and Bill White went out there in the fall and redid all the culverts over the stream crossings. And then one more thing I do want to mention, I am hearing from some of my friends who are executive directors of land trusts in other parts of the country that they are closing preserves. And, of course, we do not want that to happen here, and we don't think that will happen here. But I do ask people to remember that 10 seconds of kindness and maybe 10 feet of space when they're at trailheads and out on the open spaces. Also, of course, this is mud season, and so remembering that trails like the Rail Trail or Silver Quins or the Millennium Trail that are paved might be better choices when it gets real muddy.
Okay, Cheryl, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Cheryl Fox is the Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Again, the meeting for tomorrow has been postponed. Also, later on in the hour, I'll be talking with Salt Lake Climbers Alliance Executive Director Julia Geisler. about her and her partner's experiences testing positive for COVID-19. She also has a message for climbers who are looking to get out on the crag. Right now, though, Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson joins us. Good morning, Bruce. Bruce, are you there? Well, as part of Governor Gary Herbert's mandate to the state, Utah State Parks are still open, but only to residents of the county that the park is located in. KPCW's David Boyle reports that means that Wasatch County residents cannot visit Summit County Parks, and Summit County residents cannot visit Wasatch County Parks.
Even Summit County residents with boat slips at Jordanelle State Park or season golf passes at Wasatch Mountain Golf Course are being turned away by state park employees. Wasatch Mountain State Park manager Tracy C. says they hate to do it, but they are sending people away.
Unfortunately, this past weekend, I turned away 13 people. They came from Salt Lake, Utah County, Summit County. And you feel bad as a park ranger because we're supposed to be here to help you get out and recreate, but that is the governor's mandate at this time. So unless you can show that you're a county resident, we're turning you away at the gate.
The state parks will stay open to county residents for now. Wasatch Mountain State Park has 23 miles of non-motorized trail. C says they have been very busy with record numbers for the time of year.
People are getting a little stir crazy being home and being boxed in. They need some relief. We're just really asking them to keep the social distancing at the trailhead. Don't gather, don't come in groups. We're supposed to be under 10. We prefer that it's even less than that. I've been having issues with people stealing my toilet paper and my hand sanitizer out of my restroom, which is really frustrating for the other folks that come to use them. We're no longer restocking sanitizer in them because I can't keep it in them, and so those are just some of the issues we're dealing with.
Although camping at Wasatch Mountain State Park usually doesn't start until warmer months, C says they have 47 campsites open now. All sites are exclusively for Wasatch County residents. C asks that all trail users follow the park rules and remain civil. She recently had a woman cough in her face after asking her to follow state and county law that her dogs be leashed in the park.
We had a situation where they let 5 dogs out of a vehicle and the dogs were running loose and we were trying to gather up the dogs and she got frustrated with me. It was shocking to me that somebody would do that. Another trailhead user that was trying to help was appalled by it and he was shaking. He's like, I can't believe somebody would do that. I can't believe somebody would act that way.
C says she's working with the county's attorney's office regarding the situation. Overall, C encourages people to only come to the state park in their county, prepare to provide proof of residency, and look up rules ahead of coming to the park.
We don't feel good about having to turn you away, so it's better if you don't put us in that position as well. I know people want to get out, but they just need to really protect themselves. I had people come from Salt Lake County just to picnic with the kids, and I hate making them pack up and leave, but that's kind of where we're at this time.
C said second homeowners and others living temporarily in the county can access the parks using proof of residence, such as a bill. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
Again, 840. And joining me now on the phone, I have Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. So you've got a meeting that was scheduled but being postponed?
Yeah, the meeting for tomorrow night has been canceled. We've been planning for this cancellation for a couple of weeks now and moving everything till the 22nd of April meeting, which is always interesting. I'll give you a little personal interest story. If you can imagine an old guy like me trying to learn 3 new computer systems to do remote meetings, we're using Microsoft Teams, we're using Zoom, and we're using our Granicus platform to be able to do a virtual meeting on the 22nd of April. So we're still going through the logistics of that. The city council is going to test it before the 22nd meeting. We're going to have a test on the 17th of April to make sure we can do it. We've got a couple of spouses that are going to call in remotely to make sure the system is working the way it's supposed to. But just imagine me trying to learn 3 new software systems from home without a lot of help from IT, because IT is still trying to build the platforms for us.
Okay, so just moving forward, though, I mean, what have you got planned for the April 22nd meeting?
There's a couple of land management code changes on there, a couple of plat amendments that are pretty minor. The main code change is the wildland fire code change for the 22nd. We're still trying to decide whether we do that one or continue it. I'd like to get it done. 2 years worth of work from the planners trying to get the thing accomplished. So we're still working on the 22nd agenda. We just published the legal notice, and I don't have it in front of me right now.
Okay. Well, do you expect the issues to be controversial?
Well, the council wants two things from us. One, they want to make sure that it's going to work, and two, they want to make sure it's enforceable. So on the wildland fire stuff, right now our proposal is to make it forward-looking. So if you're doing a development activity, you're probably going to have more compliance than if you're just a homeowner. And we're trying to figure out how to help homeowners looking backwards that want to be more fire compliant without complaint.
So back to my question, though, do you expect it to be controversial?
I don't expect it to be controversial, but you never know.
Well, it would go on to the county, the city council, though, anyway?
Yeah, it'll go on. Well, depending on what the Planning Commission does, it'll go on to the city council anyway.
All right. Also, just wanted to ask you, where things stand with regard to the parking lots at the base of Park City Mountain Resort?
We're continuing to have conversations with them, with PEG, which is the proposed developer of it. There's some technical issues underlying it. We've asked some fairly complicated questions with respect to traffic and transit and how their parking's working. There's some discussion with respect to how they're measuring height versus how height was measured in 1997. So, you know, it's a hard project. We have two planners assigned to it, which is not normal. Normally, we only have one planner assigned. So I would expect that we'll see them in May in front of the Planning Commission in a pre-application kind of workshop setting so the Planning Commission can weigh in on the issues that they see.
Okay. And have you seen an application for the joint headquarters for Mountain Trails and Summit Land Conservancy?
No, but we're working on it. Obviously, we're trying to coordinate with both those agencies and how we handle it out there at the golf maintenance building across from the soccer fields at Quinn's. We think it's a good idea, and I think it can work. We're just trying to figure out the details, and as soon as we see an application, we'll move it forward.
Okay. Hey, anything else you want to mention?
No, I appreciate everybody. You're aware that MARSAC is kind of locked down right now. We're all working from home, so it's interesting trying to coordinate all these things. So make an appointment with one of our planners or send us an email, which is way easier to try and coordinate getting your questions answered.
Okay, and what email should that go to?
You can send it to me at bruce.erickson at parkcity.com, .org, or if you know who your planner is, just send it directly to your planner.
Okay, Bruce. Hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:45. Well, as we have reported, a large number of Utah's cases of COVID-19 right here in Summit and Wasatch counties. One of those cases was by a server at a Summit County restaurant who came into contact with a group of Australian tourists back in mid-March before the resorts had closed down. His partner is Julia Geisler. She's the executive director of the Salt Lake Climbing Alliance, who on a public Facebook post, wrote about their COVID-19 experiences and agreed to share them with us. Julia joins me now on the phone. Good morning. Hi, Julia. I had you on the wrong pod. There you are. So you and your partner are healthy but still in isolation?
We are healthy. We are self-distancing just like everybody else. The test results that came back, they advised that we didn't need to self-isolate because we had been past the time of the virus being spreadable, but we've been doing that pretty much anyway, self-distancing and maintaining all of the recommended CDC guidelines to stay put.
Yeah, so your partner was tested. You weren't. You were basically just told to assume that you would test positive?
Yeah, so he had symptoms, and we called the national hotline for days, and they said he, you know, wasn't sick enough to get a test. And then when Quinn's opened, we went over there, and they said, you know, yeah, we can give you a test to my partner, Blake, and but that they would only test one of us to assume that I had it if we were living together, which we are. And so it did come back positive, and, you know, we're not sharing this to put our own health concerns out to the community because we're fine. We had very mild symptoms. It's more hopes in that sharing this will encourage us all to continue to do our absolute best to keep each other safe, you know, stay home, stay local, tamp down our outdoor adventure indulgences because we were unknowingly, you know, carriers and feeling very mild symptoms.
Yeah, and that's what I guess I'd like to talk about that because I think for many it's like, oh, wow, you know, I had a sore throat. Oh, I had a headache. No coughing, no shortness of breath. Can you talk a little bit about your mild symptoms?
Sure. So there was no fever or shortness of breath. It was more the, just like you're saying, those mild cold symptoms. Blake did lose taste and smell, and so that kind of was a different feeling than having the regular flu or cold, which, you know, prompted us to try to get a test or try to get him tested. And then also just hearing that the Australians had, you know, had positive tests was enough.
Yeah, like 2/3 of them had positive tests, I think. And they had actually, so he kind of could put two and two together based on some of the conversation he had heard that night as he was serving them?
Yeah, that night, and then, you know, follow-up communications afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess, I mean, your story is that people just need to take it seriously, and even though you may have been on the lucky side, we hear so much about people feeling good one day and then really taking a turn for the worst.
Yeah, and it's terrifying to think that we're carriers and we could have spread that to, you know, our parents or our loved ones, that even though you're socially distancing from, or I should say physically distancing from, you know, that would be the worst thing to imagine. So really taking it seriously. And I think that also applies to, you know, our outdoor adventures and gatherings.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. As the director of the Salt Lake Climbing Alliance, you've been putting out notices for other climbers. What, basically, just don't do it?
Yeah, so, you know, the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance is your local not-for-profit rock climbing advocacy and stewardship organization. And usually we're saying, you know, keep climbing access open to the crags and keep climbing areas sustainable, you know, limit our impacts. Right now, it's not the most responsible behavior to go out and go climbing. We've been asked to stay in place. Most oftentimes right now, climbers are headed to the desert and rural communities are asking us to stay put. They're usually depending on our tourism dollars to come, you know, to southern Utah. They're saying stay home. Climbing gyms have closed down. And with all this comes a lot more people along the Wasatch Front and Wasatch Back looking to get outside and go to climbing areas, and there's a lot of us and finite number of climbing crags, and, you know, more than anything, the shared surfaces of climbing from holds and ropes are a way that we as climbers can potentially spread the virus. Not enough is known about outdoor surfaces like climbing holds to really make an informed decision to climb, so let's try to be responsible and think for the greater good with the collective action. Right. Not to climb.
Yeah, I was going to say nobody's out there with their Clorox wipes disinfecting the rock.
And then, you know, the other aspect is our search and rescue. Those volunteers shouldn't be put at risk to come out for a climbing-related accident or stress the healthcare system with, you know, a climbing-related injury. It's a very communal sport, climbing, and even, you know, the more rural, remote crags, if we're being asked to stay in our counties and stay put, We should try to do the right thing and do everything we can not to spread this virus.
Okay. But so far, so good for you guys. You feel like you're on the road to health?
Absolutely. And we're so lucky here in Park City to have, you know, the garage is our trailhead to our paved trails. So getting outside, getting this fresh air, letting the spring sunshine seep in is very healing. And, yeah, we're lucky to live where we live. We're very privileged.
know, and for the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance, we are a nonprofit. All of our programs are on pause, all of our events. We usually have a big June fundraiser in the Black Diamond parking lot that's been canceled, and we're putting a pause on our trail work and on our anchor replacement work until it becomes appropriate to get out and do that kind of work. Our volunteers have been meeting just like everybody else virtually to discuss how to keep the nonprofit alive. Funding, like all nonprofits, has been severely impacted by this. So
yeah,
we try to keep it going. We look forward to getting back on the rock. You know, people are at home building their own climbing walls, and professional climbers are sharing their home workouts on social media. So we just, you know, say hang in there, and it won't last forever.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Yeah, right. All right, Julia. Hey, thanks for sharing your story. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us on. Bye.
That's Julia Geisler again, the Executive Director of the Salt Lake Climbing Alliance. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time now, 8:53. Well, the Park City Board of Education launched a master planning process in 2018 to determine the future of education and what it should be in Park City. Community input has guided the process, and last week, the architects unveiled detailed plans to the school board. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
After 18 months of stakeholder meetings, MHTN Architects was hired in January to take the master plan to the next level by showing what campuses and learning centers would look like under these new guidelines. The master plan defined three major initiatives: ninth grade moves into the high school, realign 6th through 8th grade into one school, and bring pre-K programs into the four neighborhood elementary schools. Business Administrator Todd Hauber says all the elementary schools would have four additional classrooms dedicated for pre-K. The district currently offers limited access to pre-K enrollment. In addition to universal pre-K offerings, the master plan calls for a before and after school service.
Two of the elementaries would have the dedicated pre-K space, and two of the schools would have the pre-K space plus the wraparound services. Put drawings out there for is what would McPolin look like with the wraparound services that includes pre-K. And then they also showed a drawing for Jeremy Ranch that would have that pre-K space with the wraparound services as well.
The architects showed two options for Ecker Hill Middle School. Both would move the current cafeteria and gym and build more CTE and maker space. They presented two design options for Ecker Hill. Instead of two middle schools, they recommend one school for grades 6 through 8, which would be located at the existing site. The decision to move 9th grade back to the high school was made more than 5 years ago by a prior Board of Education. The 2015 bond measure to remodel and expand the high school failed at the ballot box. Option A leaves the Eccles Center intact with a redesign and high school expansion eastward on the school grounds. The current McPolin site would be turned into playing fields, and it would move to the Treasure Mountain Junior High location. This plan would increase parking stalls from 734 to 935. Hauber says this option would require changes to traffic circulation throughout the entire campus.
I believe the second one is actually a redesign of the space where Eccles is now, but still has that expansion to the east. But it redesigns the classrooms to be more linear with the rest of the building, and the Eccles sits just behind those classrooms. Each part of the high school redesign along that Kearns Avenue could include the additional spaces needed for the ninth graders.
Option B would relocate the Eccles Theater, add on to the existing high school, tear down Treasure Mountain, and replace with fields and tennis courts. McPolin would remain in the same location and include an addition to the south. Option C would replace the high school in phases over the next 15 or 20 years. The architects were asked to consider a 25-year plan when designing a reimagined Kearns campus. Both options B and C would move parking behind the high school and to the east of McPolin. The number of parking stalls would be 775. The school board meets on April 21st. With the uncertainties of the coronavirus spread, Hauber doesn't know the financial impacts yet. He says they hope to have cost estimates for the proposals either by April's meeting or shortly after. You can find a link to the drawings on kpcw.org. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
And the financial impact of the COVID-19 shutdown likely to hit the Summit County economy hard. During the live stream Coffee with Council this week, county officials discussed economic forecasts that show revenues dropping to levels seen in 2016 or 2017. Summit County Councilmember Glenn Wright said the revenue hit from the COVID shutdown outpaces the fund balances that the county has available.
Jeff really made a good presentation to us a couple of days ago on the magnitude of the hit to the gross regional product. It's on the order hundreds of millions of dollars. And as Tom mentioned, our fund balances are in the single digit millions.
Summit County Economic Development Director Jeff Jones said that national GDP for the second and third quarters show significant losses, which will impact the county twofold because the local economy relies heavily on the hospitality businesses.
According to my analysis, the first quarter across the country, GDP dropped about 3%, and the second quarter nationwide dropped about 18.7%. We're going to feel that hit. Our workforce numbers, our loss is going to actually be about double on a per capita basis than the national average. So we're going to probably see our own gross regional product peel back to 2016. 2017 levels.
Jones projects a fourth quarter recovery and says that the county is working with local businesses, regional economic developers, Park City, and the Chamber Bureau. He expects more stimulus as the shutdown continues, and he urges business owners to stay informed by summitcounty.org.
Working with Becky Kearns and Rob Surgeon, who have led a small team to put together a plan that nests underneath the governor's plan that is broken out into three phases for economic resiliency and recovery. And those phases are the urgent phase that we're in now, the next phase is stabilization, and the third phase is recovery.
Wright says that part-time workers may be eligible for unemployment benefits through the CARES Act. He urges everyone to apply online with the Utah Department of Workforce Services.
There have been some backups, but those, if you're eligible for unemployment compensation, you need to get online and make sure that a check starts rolling in. The CARES Act has added $600 a week for each individual person.
Meanwhile, the council is waiting for legislative approval for an exception on using the revenues from the transit room tax as well as the recreation, arts, and parks tax for COVID relief.
The governor's going to let a special session of the legislature make a decision on this. He doesn't seem to want to make it himself. And there seems to be some movement towards allowing use of fund balances going forward, less so on the ongoing funds. But we're going to have to see what comes out of the legislature on that. And there will be a special session probably in the next few weeks.
Links to the programs for that can be found on our website, kpcw.org. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for headline news, then This Green Earth. It's 9 o'clock.